I am Herb Brokering. The name of our event today is called Holy Places Under the Marxist Flag. I went down and talked to Wes Preeb, and he said, "Oh, you're having a little Luther village up there." And that's what I set up. I set up the villages, the towns where Luther lived. It's like being in the middle of geography. I've always had trouble with space because in our country school, the top of the map was always north and we faced east. And I'm always off a turn. I've always been off one turn. And so I have really flunked geography so many times. And it's not a good feeling to flunk space. So I have worked at it until recently. I have been a failure in geography. I don't know. I've even been in the Holy Land, and I thought I was going the right direction, and I was heading away from Jerusalem instead of toward it. I know the way home, and I made myself at home. To me, space is very sacred. To you too. In a seminary to which I commuted, of which a few of you know very well, I did a strange thing which I called a course called Creative Education. I've been teaching it for 19 years in seminaries. Most of the time, the seminaries don't know I'm teaching it. It doesn't look like a course. I remember closing the door and pulling the blinds, and for 2.5 hours, we examined space in the room. We're on the floor, had our hands underneath the furniture, and I had them feel space that they would never look at. It was amazing for these students now in theology to touch something that they would never see, because you know how they examine everything. Now they had touched something that they promised they would never look at. That's called ambiguity. That's called not looking at what you just touched. That's called just around the corner. It was frightening to some of them. It was even nonsense to others. There was one student in the group, I'll never forget, he was pulling about a high D minus in the seminary. He was just struggling to find a parking place. And I can remember the conversations in the faculty meetings, and I never said anything ever at a faculty meeting, because once at a district convention 37 years ago, I said one thing and they said I was out of order, and I stayed sitting. I have never, ever said a thing on a convention floor again. Doesn't mean I quit talking. I just don't talk sometimes. I don't talk when it doesn't feel like it feels like the right time. So Ralph went to a Presbyterian church that week because he was custodian. He did a wonderful thing. He went in the closet, got out the brooms, and then he stopped a while and he shut the door. And for the first time in Ralph's life, he realized he was spatial. He wrote a poem. That's rather sad. He went all through confirmation and never realized he was spatial. He was flattened out by a blackboard or green board, flattened out by a chart, flattened out by answers, but Ralph never knew that Ralph was in space. He never knew he was going anywhere. He didn't know he'd come from anywhere. He was just trying to learn things right. And he had a D minus. Ralph wrote a poem. He came to class. He read the poem. And I could still see Walter Moman, my friend, come just kind of teeter-tottering from side to side down that hallway, laughing and saying, about 6 months later, "Ralph has finally discovered that theology is spatial. You should read his paper on theology." Walter is my friend. I never told Walter the story I'm just telling you. I hardly ever talk about it, never before people who are important. I mean by that, people who would criticize me for helping Ralph that way. And then when Ralph had a call to go to North Dakota, he got frightened and he called me out to the parking lot because I was commuting from Minneapolis to Columbus, Ohio for 3 years teaching at Hama and at what is now Trinity. And he said, I'm afraid to go. I don't know what to do. And I said, Ralph, I don't either. But let's just try something. When you get to North Dakota, why don't you lie on the ground and look up? Then you turn around and you look down. Then you stand and you look east and you look north and you look west and you look south. And you'll be there. He's still there. He's still there. He likes it there. He's really there. So I want to take you some places, some holy places. You wouldn't believe that I hurried back several times from the East Block, where I have taken 22 groups in pilgrimages. I hurried back just in time to teach in the Navy Chaplain's Career School in Newport, Rhode Island. They don't know it in the East Block, and the Navy doesn't know it either. But I teach in both places. I just don't tell them. I don't know why the Navy wants me, except that the Navy keeps asking me to teach them, that is, the rabbis and the priests and the pastors who are chaplains, how to get on location in worship. So we call it the dynamics of worship. We've got to give it some kind of a name. Now I just want to describe three tiny stories that have really to do with how I find holy places in Holden, at home, or in the East Block. It really doesn't matter where. It's kind of to get, come into a place and sit down and mark it out and say, here I am, and look around and realize that everything you can see and hear is yours, and you're on location. It's the way I used to watch chickens kind of make themselves a nest. And if they made one good nest, soon they became clucks. It just happened that way. And I remember how we kind of seduced them by putting like a fake egg down until the chicken would find its location. So one thing that's very helpful, and you can do it as an exercise, take a whole day and just think of space, weight, thickness, length, breadth, height, where, just where. So another one would be temporal, just when. But let's just go with where for a while. So a chaplain comes up, and he's a priest, and he is going to take us to a holy place in this empty room. But once he gets into aware, he gets aware. You should see the awareness when someone gets somewhere. And when he sees this rock, and he brings it here, and another rock, and soon he's got an altar. It's such a big altar. That's such a heavy altar, and I can see the Baptist over in the corner getting very nervous because this man is building a holy place, and when we ask him how thick it is, how heavy it is, soon the Methodists are guessing the weight of these rocks, and they're helping this Catholic build his altar. And when he gets it all built, he thinks he's done. I ask him to kiss it. Now, where does he kiss it? I watch him. He kisses it in the left-hand corner. I've asked him to take us to a holy place. And, you know, he says, I don't have to do that since Vatican II. See, but he still kissed the corner. I have him kiss it again, and I ask him where his lips are. That's a spatial question. He said, my lips are on a rock. And where does the rock come from? He says, the one I'm kissing comes from Jerusalem. And the rabbi takes his hat and sails it across the room. Now the rabbi is helping him build his holy place because the rock his lips touched are in Jerusalem. You see how fast we can get somewhere? Ralph thought he was flat till he found himself in a closet. He kissed it again. I said, where are you? And he said, as a relic, I'm in Rome, in the catacombs. I'm in a Eucharist. I am down underground. And what a community he was in. He went there so quickly, he went there as quick as a kiss. I had to keep asking this priest. He was 47. You would think he would have known how to go through this whole thing himself. I said, would you kiss it again and tell us where you are? He kissed it once more, and he said, I have kissed Christ. What a lengthy journey, but he got there. That's what he was going for, Christ. And then I said, and now where do you go? And he didn't know. He just stood there like a boy who just discovered a new toy, didn't know how to wind it. And I said to him, turn the page. Oh, he said, now I turn to the people and I take this kiss from the corner and I give it to them. And now it was a kiss of peace. Now, I could never have told him that, because, you know, by the time you're 47 and you're in charge of worship from the time of ordination, you don't have someone coming in and telling you very much. And I don't mean to tell you very much about spirituality and what it means to find a sacred place. But that's how that priest found it. And I could hardly keep the next priest from standing. And now they were not about to imitate each other. This priest held out a cloth. You should have seen it. It was so delicate. And on it was a loaf of bread. It wasn't really there, but it was really there. And he broke it. And it was in the breaking and the dividing that he found his Christology, the presence of Christ at work in ministry. He was so excited. He was so excited. And the next priest could hardly wait to get up. And this priest now, they didn't want to outdo the others, but he wanted to find another altar. He said, my altar is 3 stories high. My altar has a door. It is red brick. I walk into it every morning. And inside my altar, there are those who care for those who need care. And it's a psychiatric hospital, and I walk into my altar every day. He said, I never saw it until now. And he said, you should see the Christology between the people. He was talking like Luther. He was talking like Christ. When you get on location, you talk differently. When you get home, you lean back and you say profound things. I'm not going to tell you very many statistics about the East Bloc. Like, to know that there are 16 million people, probably, or 17 million in the German Democratic Republic isn't so exciting, except that a lot of people in America don't know that anyone's there. They're just some over there. So I've been taking people over there, and we go grassroots. We go through the FDJ, the Free German Youth Organization, and we go youth hostels. They have no program. I make the whole program. I make the state program, I make the church program. So I ask the atheists to speak to us, and I ask the Christians. And I know many. And I'll be going from here to Canada for 2 days, and then I go back into the East Bloc, and I lead another 2 groups, grassroots. And we don't have food like you have. We sometimes sleep 13 in a room. And it's not easy to travel, but it's like a closet in a Presbyterian church. I want to tell you about a holy place over here. You see the Wartburg Castle on the hill with a cross on it? You see it here? And you see the little, that's Eisenach. You see the Thuringian forest, the green, and the hills, and you see the hat up there? The hat should be lower. But it's up there high because the hat belongs down in the schoolhouse where Martin Luther went when he was 13 years old. It belongs to Trebonius. And Trebonius was his teacher. And sometimes Trebonius would take off his hat and tip it to the students when they came into the room because he thought they might be famous. So I put Trebonius' hat, which really comes from Poland. And I have not worn it yet. But I brought it to Holden thinking I would be brave enough to wear it here, but I haven't yet. At least it's here. This is Eisenach. And down here in the valley, down here is the mother house. Over here is the Kata house. And when the communists say, would you like to go to the Kata house? I say, I would like to go to the Mutter house. Mutter house? Where's the Mutter house? Oh, We always go to the Mutter House. The Mutter House is the diaconate home. And that's home base for a diaconate ministry, and there are many, many diaconate ministries in the East Block. It's a compassionate work, training nurses, training teachers to go into homes, to go into hospitals, to go into parishes and do ministry. That country is full of diaconia. It's got towels all over the place. One of the shapes of ministry in the East German Democratic Republic is towel ministry. One-on-one, small group. And what do we do in the Mutter House? Well, when we come there, they all come with their little bonnets and they embrace us. They embrace us and they just wait till we come in there, and then they can hardly wait till we sing. And when we get done with this stanza, I'll have you sing it with me. They can hardly wait because we always sing it. And they never sing along, they just know that it sounds good. And this is what we sing, and you sing with me. Children of the Heavenly Father, safely in His bosom gather, nestling bird nor star in heaven, such a refuge e'er was given. Hum it. Then they take us to an upstairs room. They tell us a whole story. Our guide is a communist. She sits among us. She's a university student. She's falling in love with us. She's never been in a diaconate home. Her government doesn't take her there. Tour guides don't take them there. We take her there. You hum it once. Then we go to the hospital very softly. No one goes to the hospital to do what we do. We go to the hospital, and there in the hospital we sing Christmas carols on the second floor. And they come out of all their rooms, and they can't believe that Americans have come all the way to Eisenach to sing in the Mutter House. We spend 2 hours there. We go into a room where they make tapestry. And you should see the tapestry. They have a waiting list of 2 years. When I was there just the other week, 3 weeks ago, I said, please, could I have something for David Preuss? He's been losing all over the place. He lost 1, 2, 3 things in a row. I didn't really say that. But I did say, he's a bishop, he's my bishop, I want to bring him a gift. And I knew I wanted to cheer him on at the end of his season. And they said, it would take 2 years, but we have something. If you want it, we'll sell it. I bought it. You should see it. It's nice. Like, that tapestry is nice. It's nice. They made it. I get their weekly newspaper. Their weekly newspaper is so open. It tells everything. It tells which widow is looking for a husband. It tells everything about the Kirchentag. It tells sermons. It gives children puzzles to fill out. It comes to my home every week. The church in East Germany is brave because there's a separation between church and state, and the church in East Germany is finding itself. It's rediscovering what it means to be a congregation the way we form congregations, only we don't go over there to tell them how we do it. We go over there to ask them how they do it. And how they do it is that they train you, sir, to be a kind of human being who is Christian. So when you go on your cooperative farm and they have problems, they look for someone like you with whom to talk. And you are the strength in the cooperative farm. You probably don't go to church every Sunday. But you are a strong Christian. You're a believer. They always call me the believer over there. They never call me Herb. They call me, there comes the believer. And I like that. They know I'm the believer. Maybe they like the little money that we bring over. It isn't all that much. It really isn't. But what they like that we bring is that we bring what they want. We bring a kind of peace that they wish for their people. It's not a kind of peace that tells them, you should come to America and see how great it is. It's a kind of peace that goes into the hospital and says, we like this place. We don't want to be anyplace else. We eat your food. We're not asking for McDonald's. We're going to eat your food. We're going to eat your sausage and your cheese every morning and every night, every morning and every night, just like you do. And we're not going to live in the inter-hotels where you can't live. We're going to live just where you can live. We're going to live in your youth hostels. That's where we live. And they notice the difference. Tambak Ditarts, not very far away. We'll go to another song in just a moment. I think you'll know it. We came there in rain. It was two small bus loads. It was really too many. They were expecting one. It was a small youth hostel. By the time we saw where we would have to sleep, it was in the hallways. It was just all over. I thought that the group would probably turn the bus around and go home, except they couldn't, because we were now in the East Block. But something wonderful happened. Just before we left Hanover, I sent someone out to get fruit, and she got a huge box of fruit, which we wanted to eat. We hadn't eaten it yet. We'd come across the border, we hadn't eaten it. And there was this huge box of fruit in the bus. And I thought, what could heal us in this night? So we went out and got the box of fruit, and we brought it in, and we gave it to the man and the woman who were running the youth hostel. You can't imagine their joy that 60 Americans had come to Tambak Ditarts, which you haven't even heard of, which hardly anyone has ever heard of. It's just hidden way back in the Thuringian hills. And I wondered, why would they do this to us, you know, hide us back in the woods and give us this kind of accommodation? Well, it was such a blessing. We gave this man and this woman this box of fruit. Now, you don't get fruit like that in East Germany. You get fruit like that just across the line in West Berlin, in West Germany, but not in East Germany. That's like buying a car. You have to wait some 6, 8, 10 years. And fruit the same. Bananas, I said to a woman the other day, bananas, don't you like bananas? Oh no, she said, children like bananas. Up to 10, they get bananas. I don't need bananas. The babies need the bananas. I couldn't believe her desire for the children to have the bananas that she couldn't have. She gave up her bananas. This great affection for doing with what you've got. It's marvelous to go into a land where this woman who is an atheist loves the little children to give them the bananas they need and doesn't want one at all for herself. And she doesn't even go to Sunday school to learn that. She doesn't go Sunday after Sunday to continue to want that. So anything that has to do with compassion, which we know in Christ, which we can do, they like. That's why the whole diaconate work is so popular. It makes socialism look good. It makes anyone look good. It makes the country feel good. When they come down to the Mutterhaus and the Communist Party leaders prefer the Mutterhaus to their own state hospital. When they come down there, do you know that once a day, every morning, the nurses go into every room and sing prayers? That's not an option. That happens. So that everyone gets sung to. And every noon, the bell rings, and everyone who isn't working gathers in the chapel and is intercessory prayer. It goes on every day, all the time, in that little tiny place, which every tourist misses. And that place has got all kinds of tributaries. I could name 5 different arms and legs of that little, that belong to that center. And they have a cross, and they have a lectern right under the cross. And this is what Sister Marie Louise, this is what Sister Brigitte, the superintendent, says. When they come, that is they, when they, the professors of medicine, come, and they lecture to us, they stand under the cross. They know where to put their lectern. They know all those things mean so much.
I mean, symbolism is so strong. That's why I've told some of you, when we take a birdhouse over there, and you know, an American birdhouse, and for atheist birds, they love it. Or when we take a Christian birdhouse over there for Christian birds, they love it. They understand that their birds in our houses is a way of intercession. How do you get through a wall? How do you get through politics that helps us hate each other? How do you do that? Christians have always had all kinds of ways of doing it. And very many of the ways are artistic. Many of the ways are really rather symbolic. They're rather musical. They're rather quick. Sign of the cross, you don't have to say very much. You just walk on, that's a whole paragraph. We know those signs and we use them quickly. Tambach Dietharz. When we gave this fruit to this man and this woman, I thought, we can't just give the fruit. We have to give them a song. So we lifted up this fruit and said, let the vineyards be fruitful, O Lord, and fill to the brim our cup of blessing. Gather the harvest of the seed that was sown, that we may be filled with the bread of life. Gather the hopes and dreams of all, unite them with the prayers we offer. May your blessing give us a foretaste of the feast. Do you think they knew what we were doing? You bet. They knew that we were believers, we'd given them a gift, and we'd said a prayer. And then they told us it was their wedding anniversary. And then they now shared fruit they had never had with all of us. It was just, we ate the offering. It was so much. And then we found out later that in Tambach Dietharz, that place that we, that the rumor went out, Christians from America have been in Tambach Dietharz. It went out to whom? It went out through the Freie Deutsche Jugend to other Jugend hotels saying, why didn't you come and bring us your fun? And then we went up to the disco room, and there were the guys running the disco room, his grandsons. And we brought our wine, we had our bread, and we said, we're looking for a corkscrew. And they became the acolytes. They knew what we wanted to do. And they never left the room. Pulled it out, I can still hear it pop. They poured it, they set it down, they lit the candles, they turned the lights just right, and they wouldn't leave the room. They didn't want to leave the room. They didn't eat or drink. They did not eat or drink, but they did not leave the room. They just looked. It was the Eucharist in a little place called Tambach Dietharz, where we found out Luther had been when he came from Smalkalden, when they were doing the Smalkalden articles, and he passed a kidney stone in that town. You didn't know that, did you? He passed a kidney stone in Tambach Dietharz, and that's that famous town in which we were. Isn't that marvelous to know? I don't suppose a lot of historians know that. That's where he passed a kidney stone. We spent a half day looking for his kidney stone. Never found his kidney stone, but we're very excited to have been where Luther had been. Well, that's just a tiny story. Let's do O Little Town of Bethlehem. I think it's 34. Luther liked this little town. Eisenach was his little town of Bethlehem. I was intimidated by historians too, so I wrote a history book called The Luther Journey. I published it myself, so it would surely get published. Went to the bank, borrowed money, and used my garage as a warehouse. It works. I want to sing you one stanza. I wrote this book, I wrote his life five times in this book. At the end of the book, I wrote it in poetry. I'll read you the third stanza. In little town of Magdeburg, a prince gave all away. He walked the streets with empty hands, a beggar night and day. God's grace is for the taking, and this the great surprise. Christ Jesus is the gift to all, receiving is the prize. Magdeburg's right over there. This is Eisleben. This is where Luther was baptized, born and baptized. This is also where he died. He lived there hardly a year. This is Eisleben. This is a little town. We went there once. Oh, many times. One time we were with a pastor for 3 hours. He never said a word. He was the pastor of the church called Peter Paul, where Martin Luther was baptized. He never said a word. All he did was hunt toilets for us, bring us water, try and find sausages, give us a place to rest for a while because we were tired, and just help us sing in that building. That's all he did. And when we left, they all cried. He was known for that. Now he's in Magdeburg. Over here. Just over here a little bit. See Magdeburg right over here? He's in charge of the whole ministry of diaconia in the whole Magdeburg district. Isn't that wonderful? Aren't you happy that a man who can spend 3 hours and not say anything but just do all those things got a promotion? Yeah. I'm taking you to some very holy places. They're very tiny. They're almost unnoticed. Magdeburg was a very special place. People in the German Democratic Republic who are communists like Luther. In the Luther year, they called him their große Sohn, the big son. In Magdeburg, Luther learned a very important thing. He learned by watching a prince take off his princely robe and put on a beggar's robe and beg. That's why I have the begging sack up there. I think Luther learned when he was 12 years old to become a member of the begging order. He couldn't get over this person shedding his royalty and becoming a beggar. Well, a begging order in that day was not just getting a free handout, but it was Lutheran social welfare. They were collecting for others. And Luther wanted to be part of a community that would collect for justice, and he was collecting for others. So in Magdeburg, he learned to do something that makes communists very proud of Martin Luther, that he was for the ordinary people. And they're studying him. In fact, they're not studying his table talks. He is the subject of table talks. The Christians are over here, and the communists are over here, and they're sitting across the table talking about Martin Luther. And when you talk about Luther, you talk about Jesus. When you talk about Luther, you do have to talk about faith. And when you talk about Luther, you do have to talk about the church. And for 20 years, or 15, after the Second World War, they did think that the church would disappear. It did not disappear. Not many months ago, Gorbachev came to Berlin and then went to Dresden and met with some of the bishops and people whom I know very well and asked them, how is it that the church and the state are living together as they are in East Germany? You know, I want to just, this is a very important preposition. The East German church is not for communism. The East German church isn't against communism. The East German church is in communism. They're living a life in communism. That's a very interesting way to live. They're not in there trying to knock it out. They're not in there trying to go for it. They're just in there living in it at the present time. It's like leaven in a loaf. And it is leaven in the loaf. And every time we come, it's more leaven in that loaf. Or I wouldn't go. It's too hard. But we go because it's leaven in the loaf. There are all kinds of stories. Let me tell you about Dresden. I don't like to see a city so beautifully burned out. I don't like to see that city so burned out. So we thought we should do something so that we wouldn't want to burn it out ever again. We would plant trees. So we ordered some trees, and we said, we'll dig the holes and we'll plant trees in Rodeville, which is just north. We got to the congregation, they rang the bell. I looked for the holes, there were no holes. I looked for the trees, there were no trees. There were just two young men. 200 people and us and two young men, Ufa and Peter. They wanted to be baptized. We were all the godfathers and godmothers. And they were the trees. And every time we go back, we see Ufa and Peter. They are our trees. We don't want to burn them. We thought we were going to plant trees. And they gave us two young men. Those are powerful signs. We could do that in America. We could visit each other this way, the way we go over and visit there. We could find that there are some very holy places. A pastor who loves me very much read an article where someone interviewed me about these pilgrimages, and he wrote a sequel. And he said, you can't take pilgrimages into East Germany where they dynamite churches. That's what he said. And I didn't know what he was saying that for, because he was my own pastor. So I wrote a rebuttal, a very tiny one. And the tiny rebuttal was just this. It wasn't so easy in the day of Jesus to do a pilgrimage into Jerusalem when Caesar and Herod were on the throne. And it wasn't, you know, they didn't dynamite churches, they dynamited Jesus. Where do you do a pilgrimage? Where they don't dynamite, or they do? Well, he said to me, he was young and he was learning. And he thanked me a little. Not very much, but a little. He's thanking me a little more each time I see him. And the church that they dynamited at the wall was called Frisenum. Means Church of Reconciliation. Yes. That's right. That church was dynamited by the East German government. And for the dynamiting of that church, they paid the East German church money to buy four new congregations, and I've been in one of them.
America dynamite the churches.
See, we could get into some.
I was there.
Yes. Yes, I know.
I know
Friedrichstrasse in Potsdam. I know. I'm sorry when my pastor sits at home and tells me that I shouldn't go where they are dynamiting churches. I know. I know, that's why I go. And you give me courage for going when you say what you just said. And to think that now there are four mission congregations that have come out of that martyred building. The congregation of that church was living in West Berlin. The church alone, building in East Berlin, was not functioning. And now there are four churches. That's a nice bit of history. It's rather a miracle. It's like seed that sows and multiplies. I'll just tell another story, and then I'll close. This may not, this really isn't quite going in the direction I thought, because there's too much information. I've got two or three things going here. I haven't told you that this is Wittenberg. I then told you that this is the city church where Luther prayed and preached. And this is the castle church out here. I really wanted this to be the 95 Theses over here, but then I thought you couldn't get through. So I left the 95 Theses over there, and I wasn't going to tell you the 95 Theses. I was going to tell you that that is the spirit of Luther in Wittenberg. He lived most of his, all his married life there. And I was going to tell you, do you see this nice Augustinian monastery here? This is, and Katie and Martin lived here. You can see the soap. You see the children's cloth and the nice chair. And you can see the pillows. You see the students' socks, because they had a dormitory. This is Wittenberg. I like Wittenberg. She raise cattle, I suppose a few chickens. And I was looking for a fishing pole because he liked fishing, and I was looking for a bowling ball because he liked bowling. I did find a guitar case, and I didn't set this up alone. Mary helped me. And so this is Wittenberg. Wittenberg. Oh, Wittenberg. I remember going into the Marienkirche, St. Mary's Church, and a guide said to me, "It'll take us an hour." I said, "We have 7 minutes." And the guide said, "Nothing can happen in 7 minutes." I said, "My brother died in one." Well, the guide reconsidered. I said, "We have 7 minutes," and the guide said, "What do you want to see?" I said, "We want to see one thing, the chronic painting over the altar. If you see that, you see everything. You see Luther. You see Luther with his hand on the scripture and pointing to the cross, the crucified one. You see Luther also, you see the whole picture of how Cranach saw the Holy Communion. And you also see how he saw baptism, how he saw the means of grace are all there. I don't care how high the building is. I don't care how long the building is. I don't care how old the building is. What I care about is on the third floor, Mr. Glaube, who runs a candle shop. I got these candles from the candle shop. This is from Mr. Glaube's candle shop. And this is for Alexandra. This is a candle from Mr. Glaube's candle shop. I always buy candles from Mr. Glaube because he quits work, runs down in 7 minutes. He is Mr. Cranach. Cranach was the one who was the mayor 3 times in Wittenberg. He was Luther's friend. He did a lot of the drawings for the Bible. And Cranach, he not only drew and painted, but you were in the picture. You would be around the table. It was just like going. It was so contemporary. It's just unbelievable. But when Mr. Glaubig came home from the war, he was a boy. He found this room in the third floor, and they cleaned it out, and they are still having Bible studies up there. And one night I was walking through the street, and I heard this noise. I went up the stairs, and there was the room full of teenagers playing guitars in their 17th Bible study on Revelation. How about that? In Wittenberg. You don't get that on a tour. It's just all over the place. And just 4 weeks ago, 140 of us in 3 different groups came to Berlin for Kirchentag. 40,000 Christians gathered in a sports field. We, before the Kirchentag, gathered right outside the Marienkirche. There was the antenna, if you've ever been to Berlin, the very famous TV antenna, the tower. Over here was the courthouse watching us. Over here was the Palast Hotel watching us, built probably by Japan or Sweden. And over here was where Erich Honecker has his office. Everything was watching us. It was all quiet on a Sunday morning, except a horn choir. And then I raised a bottle of wine and a bread and a loaf of bread, and you should have seen 140 gather in a circle. And I said, "It's a clock. 12, 6, 3, 9. 12 cups, 12 pieces of bread. That's all the organization we need." And they came in like clockwork. They ate and they drank, and the pigeons started to swoop in and get the crumbs right off the asphalt. And people pressed in from the side from all countries saying, "What is this? What is this?" And we were communing out on Main Street in Berlin. I wouldn't do that in Minneapolis. I wouldn't do that in Minneapolis. We sing prayers softly. We call it on tiptoe in every restaurant we go through. It would be like singing in the Ramada Inn. But you have to do it with grace. You have to do it very carefully. Sometimes we only hum and they think it's sort of Muzak. But we don't quit being who we are on this pilgrimage. And just a closing story. Not now Poland, but then part of Germany, down around Chesin. Play anything. Just play anything. Soft. A year ago, a woman was on a pilgrimage, and what she heard was that the babies in Poland need layettes, and she cared. She went home and told her congregation in California, and they sent boxes of layettes to our house a few months ago, which then we had to somehow get on the bus, and then we got them on the bus, we had to distribute them among all the people who went into Poland. And we did that. It was called part of our curriculum. You know, everyone had a layette. We took these layettes like a gift. The congregation will never forget. They've already written letters saying, can we become your layette partner? They need layettes. They can't afford. They said, could you give us hand-me-downs? There's a partnership going on between West Germany and East Germany. There could be a partnership going on between us and some of them, too. There's a very live church growing in the center of Europe, and it's going to feed some of the churches that are north and west of its land. And we put a chair up on a table, put a cloth on it, saw a rose, put a rose on it, and the women began to pile the layettes and give them to the women who were to their unborn children. And we said, these are for your unborn, the unborn Polish children. It's almost poetic, isn't it? To go so far to give something to the unborn. We said, we don't want these for the born. These are for your unborn. It's a country that looks for its future. And the future is also in its unborn, those coming. We are committed to the unborn children of Poland. Just a nice thing to think about for about 4 hours. Then you can think about something else. And then they said, would you have supper with us? So we said, we'd be glad to have supper because we know how well you eat in Poland. You are such great hosts. You love the Bible, you love to sing, you love to pray, and you love hospitality. That's what you like to do. That's what church means there. And so we got off our bus, and we thought we would walk into a real building. And we didn't. They walked us a half a mile into the woods. And there at the edge of a cornfield, of a young man who owns that field, were 27 out of 27 in the choir, and their families. And they had the pits going, the fire pits. We were an hour late, and they had all the eggs, and we cracked the eggs. The thing that got it going was that I put on a towel, and when I put on a towel, our people got the idea that we weren't going to be entertained, that we were going to serve together. And they all took a towel, and we all cracked the eggs. And then you can do that in Polish and in American, it's the same. Under the cross, out there in the woods, under the pine trees, we made scrambled eggs, and we cut their bread with them, and we just ate them like sandwiches. It was just marvelous. And then they lined up and they sang the chorales. And then we faced them and we sang our songs. And then we blessed them and they blessed us. And then the pastor pointed in four directions. He pointed into the mountains and he said, I have a parish and we meet up in there. Some of my parish meets in a parsonage over there. We meet on the steps. And over there is a cemetery, there's a chapel. We meet in there and we have a church. And every Sunday when you add it up, there are 800. You see, it's there. And we sit over here, I sit over here, and I say, who are they? East Germany alone, it's 9 million Lutherans. That's a large population when you even think of the merger. And what they don't like is that we don't know them. They don't believe we don't love them. They just think that we don't know them. My father taught me when I was very little to love the anonymous, and I'm an ad hocer. I don't like to stay long anywhere. I'm on the move, because you can love someone fast and then go on. But you can stay with some people so long that it gets boring. to be the church. There's a lot of traveling going on in our land. And when you travel, become a pilgrim and look for stories and holy places and be like Ralph and find a closet and find what's north and what's up. And take a tiny thing, like a rock from your backyard, and give it to someone and have a little festival and say, "This is from my yard. You want to hold it?" And she says, "I can never come to your yard." And I said, "This is my yard. And we are now in my yard, in your yard." You know, she knows that. That's called, I believe in the Holy Catholic Church, the communion of saints. That's what that is all about. And I thank you for going to some of these holy places with me that are like the holy places you know and that Ralph found in a Presbyterian closet. Good night.